Good afternoon. Oh, forgot one of my toys. If you want to know how not to get nervous before a presentation, it's forget something and then you get panicky, which is different. For those of you that haven't met me before, I'm Rob Miles. For those of you that have, I'm still Rob Miles. Bad news just in. I'm going to be talking for about 75 minutes, but it'll seem an awful lot longer. These are the jokes, by the way. You don't have to laugh. Obviously, but it's nice if you do. I'm going to talk about something really exciting for change. Windows Phone is really nice. I'm basically going to give you a sort of a heads up of the stuff I've found out from playing with it over the last two or three weeks since I got my hands on the SDK. And so the idea here is to give you an insight into the platform, the development tools, the options there are for writing games, and how to get started, and a few answers to questions which you'll hit as soon as you get started, because I did. There will be lots of demos. I had this the theory that I'll take off an article of clothing if everyone that fails, but this might not be a plan. So we'll see how it goes. It's all CTP stuff, but it's all mostly worked. I tell my students, the worst thing you can do at the start of a lecture a presentation is to lower people's expectations by saying this might not work, okay? So there you go. It's amateur hour, fair enough. Okay, now I'm not going to tell you much about the platform and the tiles and the hubs and the nice sort of user experience that they've worked extremely hard to get. All I can say is it's really good. It's a new way of interacting with mobile devices. There's a great talk on it tomorrow. And so you should go down there and find out just what makes this thing so much better than other phones whose names begin with I. Okay, so from that point of view, there's nothing here which will tell you about the phone itself. I'm going to focus on the development side. And so as far as we're concerned, I'm going to just keep my mind firmly set on the options you've got to write code, how to do that, and how to make it work. You get to use Visual Studio, which is my favorite tool in all the world. It's the best place to write code in the universe. And you're using 2010, and you can write Silverlight, and you can write XNA apps. And you also get this emulator, which you can use for testing your apps and proving that they work. In fact, I actually managed today to take a piece of code that worked perfectly on the emulator and put it on the phone, and it worked perfectly, which doesn't happen all the time, but it's nice when it does. So there you go. That's basically, if you're a C-sharp developer and like using Studio, then you're quids in. I mean, one of the things I've noticed from a Windows Mobile background is that it seems a lot more grown up. Everything is there as it is in the desktop. The Silverlight stuff's all there, the buttons are all there, it all kind of works, and it's all very nice. And so it's a place you know and love. It's a place that you can basically keep working and doing good things. I'm going to make a brief digression into application development because I can do that as well as games. I'm ever so clever. Moving on. So it's a very capable application platform, and it's very easy to make line of business applications. What I'm going to do now is press some buttons and things will happen. My mouse is working, this is great. Now, I've not got my coder's glasses on. So if I pull a face like this, it's not because the code's hard, it's because I can't see the screen. So if I step far enough back and press a few buttons, I'll basically fire up the development environment. I wrote a program called Damage Calc. What happens with me is I go abroad every now and then, and when I do that, I wander into shops in America mainly, and I look at things and go, my goodness, that seems remarkably cheap, because I see the price in dollars, okay, and I thought, that's kind of nice. What I really wanted was a program that would actually let me type in the amount of the cost in dollars and work out how much damage it's actually going to cause me. In other words, add the sales tax and then work out the price in dollars. And so what I did, just to provide myself with a useful little application, is I wrote something that works like that. Now, it's a Silverlight app. And I hadn't done much Silverlight before. I'm learning to like it rather a lot. And basically, you've got two text boxes, one of which you type in the price of the thing, And the other one, you type in the damage it's going to cause you. And what's happening at the moment is it's deploying itself into the emulator, and in a minute or two, this screen's going to burst into life. There you go. This is what you get with the emulation experience. You can browse sites through the browser. That all kind of works. What it's doing now is putting the application in there, learning in the symbols, and okay, I can work out some damage. So I walk into Fry's in Los Angeles, and I see something which costs $100, and I've no idea what that means. So I just drop into here, and I type in 100. When I click out of there, that's actually going to cost me £76.16, you see. That's using an exchange rate of $1.50 or something. And so it wasn't actually that impressive. I don't think it was worth a round of applause, and neither do you, so that's absolutely fine. I mean, what you can also do, just to continue milking the audience, what you can also do is go into here, and I can see, okay, I've got £50 to spend. How much is that in funny money? And if I click out of here, then it comes up, I can spend $65.65. So the idea here is it's a very, very simple little line of business app. It's the kind of thing that, before I got my phone with a name that begins with I used to knock up. I could basically arrive somewhere, and I used to do this thing called jet lag coding. Anyone do jet lag coding? It's when you wake up in 3 a.m, wide awake, okay, and you want to do something, so I write programs in hotels by night. It's kind of sad, but as you're probably figuring out, Rob's a kind of sad person. But we'll move on, okay? But if you, in terms of what we've got, very simple line of business app. The interesting thing for me, if we continue with the slide, is that, knock that up. It ran, it worked, very nice. I was using data binding to make it fly. If I write this kind of thing using Windows Forms, I end up having to write glue logic, which connects the text boxes to the values in the program. So I have to write getters and setters and movers around us and all that kind of stuff. Bit tedious. In Silverlight, you can just bind properties in your program to members inside classes. So you drop into the configuration menu, you actually bind the text of the thing to an event handler. And I have a little class which I've called Damage Calc, Damage Class, there it is. And you basically have two properties in there which are bound to the bits of code inside my objects. In fact, what I end up with is this. I've basically got a mechanism whereby when I set the property of my values, all I have to do is fire this event here to update the damage property actually inside the Silverlight form. So I can isolate my code from the front end completely. And I've not done this kind of thing before, and it was rather pleasing for me to find it all works. There's a little bit more plumbing than that. What I found, this is quite amusing. You get events fired when the things change their contents. So you change the price, which updates the damage, which changes the price, which updates the damage. Anyone see a problem here, which changes the price, which updates the damage? There's a rattling noise, the stack fills up, and then the program tips over, and everyone laughs and points. No fair. So I have a little flag here called price change active, and that just is a little interlock that stops one thing from affecting another. But basically, I bound the properties, I made it work. I reckon if I spend a bit of time with this, I could easily write some code that would go off somewhere and scrape or use a web service to find the current exchange rate. I could then make the application location aware so that it not just figured out what the exchange rate was, but also told me the local taxes in that area. And so there's a whole bunch of nice things I could use to add value to this thing. And finally, of course, once I've got it to the point where I think it's kind of useful and my friends kind of like it too, I'll bung it in the Windows Marketplace and let other people pay me 50 pence or so to actually play with it. So it's a nice way to write little line of business apps. If you have an idea for a little product you want to make, a little app that you might find useful, then you can knock one of these things out while you're jet-lagged. Fly somewhere and then sit in your hotel at 3 a.m. writing the code. So that's applications. I'm trying to keep this focus on games, though. I'm an XNA person. I've been involved in XNA for a very long time. And every time I met someone from Microsoft, I thought, might listen, I was banging the table and saying, you should put XNA on a mobile device. Please, 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 please. And they put it on the Zune, and that was good. And they put it on the phone, and that's great. So you can write XNA games, more of that a bit later. But some games in XNA are a bit hard to create. Some of them, you end up writing a whole front end of message handling and stuff like that. If you want buttons and text boxes and bits and pieces like that, in XNA, it's a bit of a pain to write them. You can do it, or you could steal somebody else's code. That's another way of doing it. But it's a bit of a pain to have to do that. If you want to make a form-based game, then Silverlight makes that really easy. This is my realization of a very, very simple Simon Says type game, a repeat the pattern thing. And if I just click on here, let's go have a look, see if we can actually find that. So I drop into here. I'll stop damage calc from running. I'll just tip that back so I can see it better. And then we'll just go off and get it. Now, I'm doing all these as we go through. One of the things that I've said, and I will do this, I'll put all this code up for you to take a look at, and as long as nobody rings back and says, you should have used a for each rather than a for next there, Rob, ha ha ha. In that case, I'll just moving on. So this one plays a very, very simple pattern matching game. And so with a bit of luck and a following wind, we should be able to get this going as well. Now, all I have here is a bunch of buttons. It's a state machine because all good games are state machines at the end of the day. At the moment, it's in the demo thing. And so basically, if I hit the start button, we'll flip into the countdown to build a sense of anticipation. Here we go. And it should have gone beep then, but it didn't. But I think I'll just increase the power of my beeps. Whoa. I've just lost as well. Start again. So here we go. Now, I've kind of fudged this. It's always the same pattern. Of course, if you learn it and then you get it wrong. Oh, moving on. Okay, right. Start again. So let's see. Dear. I'm standing here thinking, how long can I keep playing this before they all go to sleep? Well, I've managed 35 seconds so far. All right, okay, so I've got a score of 5. I'll just click on there to get it wrong. And I could sort of dress that up and add an online high score table and a few bits and pieces, different sounds, make the buttons swap round, do all kinds of good stuff. Again, put it in the marketplace. If enough people spend 50 pence on it, that's me happy. I'll get sued by Mattel at some point, which might be a bit of a downer. But apart from that, this is a nice, simple form-based game. Each of the objects on the screen is a Silverlight button. And then I've put a border around there of a different color so that I can just flip these through. And it's all done in the best possible taste. And it took me, again, about an evening to write. But if you have things like Pelmanism, pattern-matching games, the casual puzzly-type stuff, then Silverlight's great for that, and it works an absolute treat, as you can see. So if I now drift back to my... it won't let me. Okay, let's try drifting again now. So you've seen that work, and again, nobody clapped, but never mind, we're going to keep moving forwards. One of the things I will mention is that if you're moving into the mobile platform from the desktop, stuff is different. There's a bit of strangeness out there, which you have to learn to live with. Now, I've been writing mobile stuff for a long time, so this is not really news to me. The user never kills the problem, a program. You don't have an exit button. If you're writing a desktop app, you'll have the little red cross in the top right-hand corner you can kill things with. On the Windows Phone, you don't get that. On Windows Phone, the user just gets bored and goes and does something else. And that happens when they press the back button or the Windows button. As far as our game is concerned, if either of those two buttons are pressed for our program, it's Goodnight Vienna. We're about to lose everything. We might lie around in memory for a while, which will be nice if we want to get restarted quickly. But as far as I'm concerned, my whole world disappears around me, and the program is stopped as soon as one of those two buttons is pressed. The start button takes you to the start menu. The back button takes you to a sensible back place. Now, if you're at the top level of your program, back will take you out. But you can also use back to sort of drill out of low-level menus. So if you behave sensibly with that, you'll get it to behave just like the user will expect, which is a really nice way to do things, okay? So you've got a navigation set up there. In terms of the back button, if someone presses that, then what you're basically doing is you're binding to an event, which is fired. And you get enough time to effectively implement last wishes, persist the state of the actual program, and then that means that when the user comes back to it with a bit of clever coding, you can make it look as if they haven't been away. The iPhone, to mention that word again, does this very well, because it actually, you go back to the game and all the Scrabble tiles are where they were. It's just the same as it was before. That's all done by persisting stuff and bringing it back. And that's how you have to work on Windows Phone as well, which is absolutely fine. Like I say here, if the user presses back to climb out of one of your internal menus or inner screens, then you can basically capture that and then signal to the system that says, I've dealt with the back, please don't kill me. And then at that point, away you go. So that's easy enough. If you want to actually handle the exit event, there's one of those you can bind to if the start button's pressed. Although, if you start playing with the CTP version of the present emulator, it doesn't seem to work quite as well as it might. I think that's one of the things they need to tidy up a little bit. But as far as you're concerned, you'll get a notification that the sky is falling in, and it's up to you to actually persist the state of your application in storage so that when the user comes back, it's how they left it. Of course, the next question is, how do we do that? Okay, well, it's actually quite easy. You have local storage on the device to do that. Each application has its own isolated area, so you can't look at anything other than the stuff what you wrote. You're quite rigidly sort of sandboxed in this respect. And so the idea is that you have a lump of data, which can be as big as you like, which you can put things in. Now, people on the internets have been doing things like writing their own SQL databases and things and making those work using this. You can do that. As far as I'm concerned, all I want to do is hold the high score in the device somehow. So what I've done is I've written a little bit of code here called Save Hide Score, because it's kind of a meaningful, sensible name. And it basically gets my storage. It then creates a file stream, makes a file called High Score, drops out the string, which is the high score value, and then closes it, and then tidies up. So if you're looking for, in a capsule, how to persist the status of games and store information when the program exits, this is how you do it. And so you could write a whole bunch of stuff down here. You could lob out a big chunk of XML. That would be most sensible, I think, for structured data. As far as I'm concerned, I write a single integer, the value of the high score. And then to bring it back, which I do when the form loads, I've got a little bit of code here. Go off, get the user storage area again, open the high score file, read the text in from the stream, convert it into an integer, and then I set the text in the high score text box to show that, close everything, and tidy up again. So there's a couple of little bits of code there which you'll find kind of useful. Just steal these, drop them in your programs, and hey, you're persisting. In terms of the emulator, when you start it up, you have a store which you can then use until the program shuts down. It doesn't persist over stop and starts. So the first time you run the program, you can put something in. If I stop the code and run it again with the same emulator, which you can do quite handily, then it'll pick up the values from last time. So you can test like this, but you can't really persist data for real like this. But it works a treat, and if you want to know how to do it, that's how you do it. If you're writing a Silverlight game, though, the other thing which you have to set your head around is the event mechanism. XNA makes it really easy. Draw an update are called at 60 hertz. Update will get called at that unless you specify otherwise. Draw will get called whenever you can. Okay? Silverlight doesn't have any kind of eventing mechanism. So to get those things ticking over during the attract mode, and to do the timings in between button presses and all that kind of stuff, I have to have a clock tick, because that's how I make the game run forward. And there's a composition target.rendering event which you can bind to do that. And so basically, standard good old Windows delegate stuff have a method called composition target.rendering, which I then bind to the event like this, and that's basically my tick. Whenever I do this, I'm going to get called at a render cycle, which is the kind of time I want to do it. Unfortunately, I've not got a huge amount of control over precisely when that happens, so what I have to do is record previous tick values, and then effectively, this is my little bit of gearbox, if you like. It sits on the rendering event and calls game tick, and what game tick does is it gets the date and time, works out the time since I was last called, and then feeds that into my update method. So update, when it runs, is told how many milliseconds it was since last time you ran. And at that point, I can do my game timing, and I can get the game to behave itself, and I can make my things move at the right speed. And it all seems fairly sensible. And so from the point of view of making server-like games with moving objects, that's kind of cute. You could even do really cute things like bind properties in your objects, which control where it is on the screen. So rather than having to actually update things the hard way, you can just set values in your program and objects move around to keep in touch, which is great fun. That's kind of cute. I like that a lot. So, as it says here, you're not going to get this thing ticking 60 times a second. It'll tick when it's ready. But as far as I'm concerned, it doesn't actually make the game much harder to write. You just have a bit of effort. Take a look at how my Silverlight button pressing game works to get more details if you want to do that. So, that's the Silverlight. XNA is what we're here for, really. XNA runs really well on Windows Phone. I've been tracking the XNA development on the Zune, and I've been very impressed with the kind of performance you can get from that platform. And on XNA, I was very pleased when they told us they were going to do it, and I was even pleaseder, if that's a proper English word, when they put 3D in, because I wasn't expecting that, and 3D is really nice. As far as the games are concerned, we can use multi-touch and the built-in accelerometer to actually, the orientation sensor, to actually control the game objects, which means you've also got all kinds of chances to make games with new forms. I'll explore how those work in a second or two, but this is kind of cute. There is one slight issue at the moment in terms of using the accelerometer in XNA, which is that it doesn't work the same way as the Zune did. Now, I've been lobbying Microsoft like on this one for a while. So if you want to see a Microsoft person, go and say, can you put it back to how it was on the Zune, please, for Windows Phone, because I like that better. And Rob said, okay? Because it's a much nicer way to work. I've written a little emulation class which fakes the state class from XNA games on the Zune HD, which you can steal. But the other problem, of course, that you have is that if you pick up the PC and tip it, right, the emulator just ignores that. See, nothing. I've tried the monitor. I thought at first it was just because I was using the monitor. No, pick up the desk, whole thing, nothing moves. Okay, very annoying. So what I did, because I'm like that, if I just drop out of here, and I've got to do this very carefully, which is a bit of a stretch for me. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to find myself an XNA game. So I'll start this thing running in administrator mode. Yes, trust me, I know what I'm doing. And then I'm going to go in here and open up this project here. And this is going to run like mad. Oh, gamepad. Aha, hello. Are you plugged in? Yes, you are. It gets better. Are you plugged in? No, you aren't. Right, okay. I'll just plug a few things in. There you go. I could tell you my favorite joke at this point. Anyone here know my favorite joke? A horse walks into a bar, and the barman says, why the long face? Right, moving on. Okay, I've got my gamepad running, so now I can fire this beast up, and it'll just run, get a nice friendly blue screen, and if I twiddle this knob here, then the value of X and Y changes, and I move this one, and the value of Z changes. So I'm getting my X, Y, and Z values, and I'm serving them out, which is nice of me. Now I have to do some more jiggery-pokery. I have to go in here and go ipconfig so that I know, okay, one, think of a number, double it. It's, oh, crikey. 10, 22, 190. Okay, so what we do now, this is real seat-of-the-pants, nerves-of-steel stuff. You have to be extremely well trained to be able to do this kind of thing in front of a live audience, as you will shortly find out. And you're going to clap for this one, otherwise I'll be very cross. Let's open up the Starlight. Okay, now what Starlight does is it talks to an accelerometer server, which has got to have the same IP address as mine. So this is where I have to do this. Oh, thank you, Lord. So I'll just make, oh dear, put you there. It's not going to work, is it, this? My mother said yes, all right, okay. So we're going to go. If anybody sees me do this wrong, then I won't be the least surprised. 10.22.1. 1.190. A prize-winning number. Anyone got that ticket? Okay, run this. Hang on, back to where we were. Run this up now. And repeat after me. What's the worst that could happen? What's the worst that could happen? Right. So, Starlight's a sprite-based game I wrote ages ago and got running on the Windows smartphone. When XNA came out, I took it and ported it across to XNA. And when the Zune came out, I put it on the Zune. And you have this, there you go, Starlight. And there's about a couple of hundred moving star points behind there. They slide along. And you start the game and you do this. And you get music. And when I move the joypad, the accelerometer support inside the game actually picks up the signal and moves my spaceship. Now, that... See, what I can do now is I can touch the screen to fire my missile. And if I get these aliens cross with me, they'll come after me. And now I have to sort of steer away from them. If I get it wrong, then I get blown up and bits of my ship go away. And if I crash into them, then I die real quick. And that's Starlight. But this is running in the emulator. I'd love to try it on a real platform. It goes quite handily on the Zune. So I'm expecting great things off Windows Phone as well. But effectively, again, all this code's going to go out there, including the actual server. And so if you want to, feel free to pick it up, assets, drip it. If you put it on Windows Marketplace in Starlight and make a fortune, I'll be really cross. But I'd also think I was in a different universe. So we'll move on from that. But basically, what I've got in Starlight, if I just start it running and don't actually press any buttons, what I've got here is the textures are all basically strips of animated cells, which it runs through. The same's true for the actual starship. The background music is stolen from a synthesizer thing I've got, and away we go. And it's just a simple space shoot 'em up. I'll die. Dying's quite quick for me if I just fly up into the... And good night from me. So there you are. So that's a simple sprite-based game, and I can now stop that, and I can now stop my server. Come back, all is forgiven. Thank you. Where are you? Really? Fine. Okay. I think it's already stopped. That's good news. So, end of that one. So, if you want to use the accelerometer, then you can do that, and there are even tricks that you can play to actually do emulation, which is kind of cute. So, yeah, by all means, do that. Hopefully, as time goes by, if you take a look, dig around, an MVP out there has got a much better idea. He's using a Wii remote and doing the same thing. And that has actually got the proper tippy bits in. So that should work even better. So do some digging around. You can find that. It's out there as a download as well, I think. So there you go. The point this indicates, though, really, is something which I hadn't thought about until I started doing this. Your phone programs can consume web services and read web pages. Hey, wow. I used it to make a little XNA program that serves out values. This is basically the mechanism I use to actually get pages from my... This is my server with the magic number shoved in there. Make a web client, buy into the completed event, go and get it. And that just runs onto the web, fetches something and brings it back. And that, to me, on a mobile device, is pretty damn magical. Because now... I want to make this game, don't steal this, okay? Game called Web Page Blaster, where you type in a URL, it goes, it finds that page, it pulls down all the assets and the text, makes some sprites, then you can shoot up the Microsoft.com homepage. Now, wouldn't that be good? And you can do it, because you've got the bits of you can pull the page down, pull out the links, get the images, map them onto textures, away you go. So you've got all that nice stuff. Now, XNA on the Xbox 360, great place to work, heavily sandboxed. You can't do that kind of thing on the Xbox. You can do it on the PC, of course, but that's kind of old hat. But making a game that did that kind of thing, very, very easy to do, and might even be quite fun. So that's quite nice. And again, that's my code that unpacks it. And this is the kind of thing Robert does basically break my thing, my string into a bunch of elements and then parse the things out and set the properties on my accelerometer to X, Y, and Z. This is how I do it. It's all in the code. It's not particularly rocket science, but it does work, and it gives you a feel. I did have this idea, actually, of sticking a big flat piece of wood on top of there so I could tip it, and it would sort of feel like a thing being really tipped, but that's kind of a bit sad. So we'll move on from there, okay? There's no emulation support. One of the amusing things, if you go on the Windows Phone, one of the samples you can download is the accelerometer, which I thought was very amusing because, again, I tried it, it didn't move on mine. So we'll move on from there. Multi-touch, right. XNA provides multi-touch support. If you've played around with the other phone's multi-touch support, you'll find it a bit of a pain because you get these events and you're not quite sure where they came from. In the case of XNA multi-touch on Windows Phone, each event is given a unique ID. So if you get a moved event, that's tied back to the one you got the finger down event from a few milliseconds ago, and that means you can do dragging and all that kind of stuff much easier because each event is uniquely identified. And it says four touch events, and I'm thinking, oh, why can't they do more than four? And then I thought, hang on a minute. So we'll move on from there. I don't know. What I can do now, then, is I can show you my other application again. All this stuff is available or will be available. If I go down here and fetch my piano, then this I can fire up. And what this does, piece of XNA, in fact, you could probably write this much more easily in Silverlight. Because in Silverlight, you just put the lumps on the page and capture events. In XNA, I've had to actually get some textures and draw them in the right place and do a little bit of shenanigans. So let's have a look and see if I can get my piano going. So again, very simple. Just put a bunch of textures on the screen, bounded by rectangles. Get a list of button-pressed events from the device. And then I've got me a piano. And so now I can do this. Which, you know, that's okay. I can't play chords because I've only got the one mouse. What I can do, though, is this. Which, if you stand right, might actually convince someone you're really playing it. But the fact that I'm not here, so if you want to do that, I mean, all this does is, if you touch up there, it basically plays a lump of MP3. But I did this in another demo, and I was doing this, and they're all going, wow, this guy's good. But at some point it'll get bored and stop, as will we all. So there you are. If I take a look at the code while the music plays in the background, and why not, then basically this is what you need. I ask the touch panel to give me state. Now if you're an XNA aficionado, it's all the same. It works the same way as before. And so I get a list of touch points, and all I do is I basically go through my keys collection, and each key exposes a rectangle property, which I then just say, okay, are you in there? If you are, I'll play that sound. And it's like that. It just comes straight out. So that's all the code, that's the entire keyboard thing. And of course, if I get more than one key pressed, I'm going to get more than one down. Now, I'm looking for the connection state of pressed. I was thinking about this. You could do things like add vibrato by just detecting the movement, so you could mess around with the pitch. And there's some very interesting programmatic waveform stuff in XNA version 4 that you might want to take a look at if you want to do that kind of thing. But there's all kinds of fun you can have with this. And if you want to do sort of, I wanted to make like an elastic band thing where you have, put your two fingers down, do that, and you can stretch the play elastic band in the middle. Anyone do that? It was just me then. You can place that. And I thought you could make an elastic band simulation program that runs on Windows Phone. Now, wouldn't that be good? No messing around looking for an elastic band. Just get your phone out and, oh, no, moving on. So there you go. If you want to work with multi-touch, then one way to do it is to buy a multi-touch monitor because that actually gives you the multi-touch straight out of the box. The Windows 7 multi-touch is used directly by the emulator, and it all just works a treat. If you take a look on the internets again, then you'll find that there are people out there making drivers for Windows 7 that use multiple mice to simulate multiple touch points. And that kind of thing actually works quite well as well. But the bottom line, I think, really is I'm going to have a go at this myself, get a multi-touch monitor from somewhere and have a go with that, because that will let you do your pinching and your zooming and all the kind of good stuff. So that's one way of doing it. So there you go. Right, 3D. 3D, very nice to have. I'm actually more of a two-dimensional person myself, but I can see the appeal of 3D. You don't get any, you can't write your own shaders that run in the phone just yet, but the ones that are built in are apparently quite nice. And so what you do is, if I move on to my next demonstration, which should be coming up, I thought I'll do something kind of whatever. I'll make myself a program that draws triangles. And so I got out my XNA book and dug out some triangle drawing stuff, and that didn't go well at all. Because they've actually, as the slide says in a minute or two, they've actually rationalized the way that the 3D vertices and stuff are all managed to make it tidier. That means that if you've got any old XNA books, I'm afraid that's what they are now. But what I've got here, which we can play with for a while, because I'm doing okay for time, this is basically 100 triangles spinning. Effectively, I can stop that. And I can do really stupid things. Can I do really stupid things? But you don't want to know about that. So if I go up in here, everyone see that text okay? Yeah, I'll make it just a little bit bigger. Tools, options, fonts and colors. Let's go up to 50. Oh, that looks nice. Oh, that's lovely. Fantastic. So what I've got here is basically set up my projection and my view and my world. And then down here, this is the bit where I actually make myself a bunch of triangles. So if I knock this down to 10, then it's going to be a lot less impressive. So I'm just throwing triangles at this thing. And what I wanted to do is find a real device and just run this a few times and see how many triangles I can put up there before it starts to tip over. This is going to look sort of, there you go, that's not much at all. Let's put 500 in now. Just repeat after me, what's the worst that could happen, and we'll see what it does. But I mean, it's actually, the development experience on the desktop ain't too bad. No, I don't mind, that's not too bad. I'm trying to think of some kind of a game based on this. I see this more as an artistic installation. But you could put things on the triangles and have people spot when they see them and that kind of stuff. One of the things you will find, though, this isn't in the presentation, I really should have mentioned it on a slide, is that getting the emulator to work on XNA, it's kind of a little bit fussy about the graphics adapter which you've got and the precise Windows drivers that you use with it. Now, the previous versions of XNA, when you fired them up on the desktop, they used to sort of go, okay, I'll keep working until something bad happens. So you could get yourself a very, very cheap netbook and write XNA sprite games in 2D, and everything will be fine. Put it into 3D, and of course your XNA program will throw an exception because it doesn't have the hardware to do that. In the case of Windows Phone development, that hardware check is done up front, which means that you've got to have a DirectX 10 compatible shader which uses Windows driver model 1.1. And if you haven't got either of those two things, you get an exception thrown when you deploy it. Now, this is it appears on the forums at the top every now and then, it percolates down as new people discover this. This is not news. Just do some digging around. And what I did on my machine, I just upgraded the device drivers from NVIDIA. And at that point, things started working again. So if you try and make an XNA game run, if you've been writing Silverlight for a while and it's been going famously, then XNA suddenly falls over the deployment error, then the problem is to do with the fact your graphics drivers aren't as up-to-date as they need to be. If you're stuck on version 9 of DirectX, then I'm afraid it's time to buy a new machine because you can't get it to work on that. It's 10 and 1.1 driver device model. But once you get that, we can do quite nice things. And so this I want to see running on the phone because I think that would actually be kind of cute. We shall see. Time will tell. So I'll go on. I've no idea what will happen now. I'm just pushing the envelope. This could either go really well or really badly. I mean, I can do the same thing in Starlight. I can actually increase the number of stars until it goes horribly wrong. But let's see. It's doing its best. Oh, yeah. Okay. I can live with that. I think we'll stop at that point before... Yes, it's kind of like in a square, because that's my random number generator's bounded. And so that's like a big Borg cube. I quite like that. That's almost artistic. Yes, right. That's going on the blog. Okay. Computer scientists aren't allowed to be artistic. It's not permitted. Terribly sorry and all that. So you've seen triangles drawn, so 3D must work. The point I mentioned about the vertex side of things... If you're using things like models and you're working at a slightly higher level, then you won't notice. It'll just work. You bring the model in, you render it, and everything will go. As far as I'm concerned, one of the things I do for a living is teach programming. And I've always shied away from the XNA side of things. If you're teaching 3D using XNA, some of the arrangements of the classes was a bit counterintuitive because it was built based on non-object tech. What they've done in version 4, and from a teacher's point of view, this is rather nice, is they've cleaned it up and made it more sensible from an object model point of view. One of the things about XNA, which I've always liked from the very, very start, is that if you want to teach object-oriented programming, take a look at how XNA deploys the resources, and it's really well thought out. Except around the vertices, they've fixed that. And so if you're learning it, that's good news. If you've learned it and use it, maybe not quite so good news. Okay? Right. So... few more things about games and performance. Windows game on the XNA on the PC go at 60 hertz. On the phone, they go at 30. It changes the actual speed. There's a little piece of C-sharp that just changes the update rate when you start the thing running. That's because you don't want to flatten the battery, and you're using an LCD panel anyway. So as far as you're concerned, anything faster than that, the user couldn't really see. And so it's all very sensible. One of the things you can do, though, which I'll give you, which is kind of useful, we could start doing measuring performance type things. And so if I now drop back into my trusty system and open up the next project, and so we go into particle demo and open this up. This is the same kind of thing as I did with the, if we take a look in here. No, open it. Thank you. I've got a particle class, which... there's my frame rate card, I'll move it in a second, which just effectively goes under the screen and moves somewhere for a while and then vanishes. And I've got a gun that fires these things off at a reasonable rate. And what I've got here is a program that you can just keep on adding particles to it and watching the frame rate start to chug. Let me get this going. This is just another piece of, I guess you could call it art. There you go. So there you go. And it's just basically pumping out colors. And as they, this is really dirt cheap fake 3D, in that all that happens is that they get bigger as they come towards you and more transparent. So I could make, I'm using a dot texture. If I made that raggedy and put transparency all across it, I could make an explosion like this really quickly and cheaply. And at the moment, you can see at the top, you can see my frame rate counter. You can just see it on top there, ticking around at about 24, 25. And all that is a little game component which you drop on top of your game, and it does a very simple bit of maths. And again, if we're feeling particularly evil, which it would seem that, I don't know why, but it would seem that we are, if I drift down here, I've basically got a startup method. There's the bit of code that sets the frame rate on the phone itself. So they just basically put that in the code in the project when it's built. You can take it out if you like, and that's me adding my frame counter. And then this is my load content. And I've got a little particles. There we go. Let's go for 1,000 particles. And see what that does to the frame rate. I mean, it's not particularly... I mean, one of the problems you have with this, and why you have to go out and buy a new phone at some point, is that you're never really going to get a feel for what happens on the emulator. The actual emulation itself is running... Oh, that's quite sweet, actually. I quite like that. We're down to 20, still 25, though, so I may have to crank it up a bit more. The emulator is not running a processor-level emulation. This is running 8086 or Pentium code or whatever. So we're not going to get any kind of feel for performance, I'm afraid. The only way to actually make any kind of decisions on that line is to get a device and play with our thing. But then again, there's my frame counter up there, so you can do that kind of thing should you wish to do that. And I'll stop that before I get too power crazy and make it a million and the universe explodes or whatever would happen at that point. I'd feel really bad if it did, but then again, only for a very short time. So here's the code that does it. Basically, I'm feeding in the game time, measuring the count of the frames. I think I stole this from Sean Hargreaves' blog and just made it work. No. I do apologize. He was writing for the old XNA. I just had to make the changes to make it work on 4.0. So sorry about that. Bang. So that's the code that does it. Again, you can steal it. Good news for Silverlight developers, who also have an interest in frame rates. It's very, very easy to get that in Silverlight. You just go, turn the frame counter on, and bang, it appears on top. So you can watch it run like that. I'm not sure if it works on the device, but it does. Thank you, sir. So if you want frame counters on there, you can do that too. And away you go. One of the things I will suggest, if you want to see and get a taste of Windows Phone development, get yourself a Zune HD. You can buy these from eBay and from custom importers. In the UK, I can pick one of these up from eBay for about £150 for the 16 gig version on eBay, which is not too bad. There's two good reasons for buying a Zune HD, in my opinion. One is you can write and test and get experience of using multi-touch and accelerometer. That's reason one. Reason two, if you do that, you'll have a Zune HD. And they're actually quite nice. So really nice media player. You can't do 3D. You're stuck in 2D. And you're stuck at XNA 3.1. But one point I should make, it's perfectly okay to have Studio 10 and 2008 all sitting alongside each other with their appropriate versions of XNA installed, and they all play nicely together. And so if you're clever and got busy with the conditional compilation and messing around with your project configurations, you could take the same lump of game engine and use it in the Zune and a Windows Phone game. It would be probably not particularly elegant, but it would work. But I'm thinking, see, my theory is that if you want to get the edge on people who are going to put their games in the marketplace when it opens and as soon as the phone hits the market, if you want to sort of shorten the time it takes to get your head around how this works and playability side of things, then get one of these. And that means that when yours go out, you'll actually have sorted out all the gameplay issues. Play testing on multi-touch and accelerometer is actually quite a serious business. It's a thing worth doing. And so from that point of view, I'm not a Zune HD salesman, although it sounds like I probably am one. It is actually quite a nice thing to do. And what I did, if I just drop into here, you can't see this, can you? If I do press 1 and then put that on there and then sort of fiddle with, right, is that better or is that better? Oh, that's better. Right, so now if I fire up Album Shaker, this shows off something else. I could zoom in. There's a zoom. Sorry. Don't make the ooh noise, Rob. It worries people. Right, what this does, it looks quite good, actually. Another little piece of stuff you can do with your Zune and what have you. XNA on the Zune provides access to all your media content. And so my little XNA program running on here, if I tip it, this is quite cute, if I tip it, they all go that way and then that way, and the shadows move, and they all fall to the bottom corner, and I put it back. And if I touch one of them, it starts playing that particular album, which is kind of cute. Put it where you can see it, Rob. There you go. Where was I? Oh, yeah. I get access to all my media content, so I can iterate through my albums. I can start playing music. I can find the album artwork. I could make a Pelmanism game really easily using album artwork. I could have a thing where you have to touch on the two album covers that are the same, and get points. I could do all kinds of nice stuff like that. Now, this is running on the Zune HD, all the media content stuff will be on the phone as well, so you can pull the same kind of stuff off there. So if you've got ideas for neat ways to present music, if you've got ideas for neat ways to actually find albums and choose them, if I just tip it a bit, it'll speed up again. It'll just start to fall again. That's it. There they go. Then there you go. And again, another good reason to have a Zune, because you can't do this anywhere else. So if you want to have a nice sort of a weird sort of thing like this, then absolutely you can do it, but you're going to have to actually work. And what you're seeing really is my horrible music taste writ large on the screen. From that point of view, it's worth investing in. And like I said when I went off on this particular avenue, I quite like having a Zoom. It's a very, very nice device. One of the things I do like about it, actually, on a bit of an aside, when you get an artist, say like John Mayer or whatever, you get a biography of that artist and a few pictures of them, and that all comes as part of the package, which is quite sweet. So you can sit there and read about what they were doing, and of course there's links to places where you could probably buy some more stuff, but it's nice because you can get pictures and things, and it's actually quite well thought out. It makes going back to just a thing which just plays you music, makes that a bit boring. So, nice device, and again, all XNA, all just works, very pleasing. So, what to do now? Well, how many folk here are playing with Windows Phone at the moment? Well, that's not very good. Please, have a go at this. developer.windowsphone.com is a very good place to start. You can pull down the sample code, you can pull down the environment, it's all free. You can go on the forums. It seems to me that with Windows Phone, what Microsoft have done is take a shed, fill it with money and people, and throw it at the problem. And there's loads of people out there. There's all kinds of stuff happening. There's people around the back, different names popping up, giving help all over the place. It's a really nice, fast-moving place to be. So go down there and have a look, pull stuff down. Charles Petzold. Anyone here remember Charles Petzold? Goes back a very long way, almost as far as me. He and I know about punch cards. That's about as much as I have in common with Charles. But anyway, he's writing a book, The Definitive Windows Phone Development Bible. You can get the first 6 chapters for free in a PDF, download them, and they will get you started. Of course, the other thing you can do is start writing code. If you go to 3ws.robmiles.com, oh, that reminds me, then that's where I am. And so all the samples from here, and the other thing which I tend to do, I normally take the picture of the audience right at the beginning, because that way I can be sure they're smiling. But I'm going to take this one at the end. So if you go to robmiles.com, then, hang on, let's do this half. Can you all look happy, please? That's just not good enough. I said happy, thank you. And now this side. Thank you very much. This is all shameless self-promotion. Okay, and one in the middle. There you go. Thank you. Right. So if you go to robmiles.com, I'll have those pictures. Oops! That wasn't down, I went up. I'll have those pictures up there on the blog, along with the text of the presentation and all the sample code. So those are the kind of things that you should be doing. And, yeah, go out there and do stuff. I'm not quite going to say there's gold in Damdar Hills, because I want some for me. but I think if you have an idea, and you like writing C#, and you don't want to have to, nothing wrong with Objective-C and Eclipse, it's just that I don't know either of those yet. And so now, I don't have to learn them, because I've got all I need back home in good old C# Visual Studio. So drift onto these things. Don't forget robmiles.com. At this point, with 22 minutes left to go, we have to start singing, or I can answer some questions. Singing. Oh, no, you don't want to go there. No. Does anybody have, anybody got any questions? Anyone want to see more of the thing? Yes? Yes. Silverlight will do the 2D story quite nicely. And you can do. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, my experience with games on mobile devices is that 3D, yeah, it's nice, but if you do parallax scrolling and you use transparency properly and you use things like big things that are close to you move faster than small things that are further away, which is how the star field in Starlight works. It's just basically I put some things further back because they go more slowly and they're smaller. If you do that, you can do an awful lot of 3D-looking stuff. I haven't really seen a compelling 3D app on a mobile device. I'm sure they're out there. It just means I've not had experience. But yes, to get back to your question, at the moment, if you're writing 3D, then you're writing XNA. Any other questions? Yeah? Pardon? Okay, yeah. I can do that. Got time. You can pull the code down and take a look. It's really to do with the way the vertex types are managed, he said, with an air of knowledge. So if we look down here, then effectively what I'm doing, let's make this bigger so everyone can see it. Then, where are we, Robert? There you go. I do this in load content because I haven't got a graphics device until then. So here we go. That's my vertex buffer. And basically, the way you set this up is slightly different. And then down here, if you're used to this kind of stuff, then when you set the data, we're actually using this rather nice sort of typing thing, generics, to identify what things are. And so it's the buffer is now strongly typed rather than actually being sort of aware of what's in it in a slightly more hard-to-understand way, which I quite like. I mean, it doesn't take more than 10 minutes to convert once you know what you have to do. It's the knowing what to do, which is the fiddly bit for me. And so it took me a bit of time to sort it out. I mean, all this stuff's going up. I might do a little podcast or screencast sort of showing what I did to make it go. But it was just, does that answer the question? The question, by the way, was about triangles. So I should have said that. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah? Can you deploy a normal Silverlight app to the browser in the phone? I think the answer to that one is no. Okay, there's a man at the front that knows all this stuff, and the answer to that one is no, not in this release. I mean, it took me a long time to take Silverlight seriously, because I don't like writing stuff that runs in browsers. I can't be bothered to do that. But now it runs on the real device. That's great for me. I'm in there. It's lovely. Any other questions? Okay. Other questions I like are, how come you're so good looking, Rob? Or how can I be more like you in every way? Oh, maybe not that one, actually. That's a bit scary. Okay. Well, if you want to see what I've done, as I say, robmiles.com is the place to go. Thank you very much for clapping and clapping. Clapping and laughing. And if you're around at, if you're coming along to Geek Night, shameless plug, then I'll be doing some more Windows Phone stuff where I use the phone to control a robot. And they're also checking the timetable. There are two very good Windows Phone sessions tomorrow, one of which is being given by this gentleman down here who is Mr. Windows Phone. And he'll tell you all the good stuff about the user interface and how compelling that is. Okay, thank you.